Talk with Maria Bailey. Join Maria as she takes on topics important to you. From the cradle to college, Maria and her expert guests offer information, tips, and tools to make the busy lives of families easier. Now, here's your host, Maria Bailey.
We are into the new year, and gosh, you know, isn't it like, okay, you've got all the Christmas put away, maybe, if you are on the ball, or if you're that type of person that's like me, which has to set aside, and I need closure in my life. So the tree came down. I know this is really bad, and please don't shoot me for saying this, but it comes down Christmas night in my house, and then I move on to the next holiday. So here we are in January, and what's interesting about January is the month where moms get organized for spring break, for summer camps, for the rest of the year, because many of us will have pending graduations, and we have Father's Day and Easter and all of those class parties for Valentine's Day. I mean, yesterday I actually saw someone who had an ad already for Valentine's and St. Patrick's Day party. I mean, come on, can we slow down a little bit? Anyways, so here we are in January, time to get organized and get fit. And I am not making a resolution to lose weight, because those resolutions just doesn't work. You know what I noticed, though, speaking of resolutions, that a lot of people are just picking a word for the year. And I noticed that my son actually picked a word the other day. His word is faith. And I thought that was pretty cool. So I started trying to think about, well, what would my word be? And I think my word is going to be passion, because I try to always find the passion in things, because then they become a little bit more enjoyable to do. And so passion is the word for me. No more resolutions here. It's passion. And I hope that you, like me, have a passion for parenting, a passion for our children, and that we'll help them be the best that they can be this year as well. Speaking of children, did you know that January 2nd, this is going to be one of those random things, January 2nd at 10:36 is the most popular time to conceive a baby in England? Yes, don't ask me how I know that, but I read it while I was in London this past week. And it's not far off from the United States. We actually conceive most of our babies between Christmas and New Year's. So you know what that means. That means right around September 26th through the 28th, we will have a whole lot of new babies being born, because a lot of you guys were either, I don't know, out partying and people get pregnant, or you just festivities, you're in love, everybody's happy. But if you find that you are one of those moms who are now expecting a baby in September, check out Drink Pre Mama, because it's the it's not only the sponsor of Mom Talk Radio, but it's the prenatal vitamin that's easy to swallow. It can be mixed in all of your juice. We have a big show lined up for you today. We're going to be talking about a lot of mom stuff. And when we return, we're going to be turning our attention to the editor of KidTripster.com.
Mom's Little Secret, Mom Talk Radio.
A lot of moms actually spend their time in January planning trips, either trips for spring break or trips for the summer. A lot of us book ahead. So we spend that downtime when we're in snow and we're looking for those warm destinations, planning trips. And so we thought it would be very valuable for you to hear from a professional. She is Shelley Bailey Shaw, the editor of KidTripster.com, an online family travel magazine that provides information and inspiration to families traveling with kids anywhere in the world. And as someone who just got off of a plane last night from London, I can tell you that sometimes traveling with children can be quite challenging. So Shelley is here to give us a little bit of advice on ways to save money, particularly over spring break. So Shelley, welcome to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And not just sometimes is it challenging to travel with kids. It's always challenging to travel with kids, I think.
Well, I think it's challenging, but I think it's the mindset. At certain times, you have a better mindset going in than at other times. But one of the focus that you're talking about in your magazine right now is saving money for spring break, because you really should be planning now. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. And, you know, as you know, a lot of American families want to travel between mid-March and mid-April. And the airlines, the hotels, the resorts, the theme parks, they all know that. And so it's hard to get a deal on those types of vacations. So as parents, we really need to zig when we were expected to zag. And what I mean by that is we need to think beyond the obvious destinations.
And so first of all, what are the obvious destinations? I know I live in South Florida, so Florida
you
parks
are an obvious
is always
destination.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, theme parks, all-inclusive resorts, cruises. I think those are the spring break go-tos. But I'd kind of encourage you to think outside of that. For example, go abroad. You know, a lot of American families travel either during the summer or the holidays abroad. But instead, think about spring break. You have at least 9 days. And if you take the kids out a couple of days before the break, you know, I think this is a pretty good reason to do that. Traveling abroad can be really educational, so I'm a big proponent of that. But there's a lot of international destinations that you can go to that you can do so at a cheaper price. Australia, lovely time of year to go to Australia. It's the country's autumn. I'm a huge fan of Cambodia, one of my favorite destinations for families.
I love Cambodia.
Yes, love it. And yes, it's going to be hot and humid, but you're not going to have to fight those peak crowds that you would otherwise. And of course, there's always Europe. Now, you know, the rates are going to be better than summer, and the weather is going to be a little unpredictable. But if you're going to one of the large European capitals, like you said, you just got back from London, Paris, you're likely going to be spending a fair amount of time indoors anyway.
Yeah, and you know, there's some really good deals right now. I saw yesterday a deal round trip from New York to London for $240 round trip during spring break month.
That's killer.
You know, that's amazing.
It is. And, you know, even if you're not up to taking a trip abroad, certainly there are destinations right here in the United States that are going to be more economical during that time period. A lot of people are making that mass exodus from the cities during spring break. Turn that around. You know, take a city vacation. On KidTripster, we've devised these family-friendly city guides that identify the top 10 plays, stays, and eats for major cities across the country. And what's unique is that we've had these guides written by parent journalists who actually live in those cities, so you're going to benefit from their insider knowledge. And if you don't want to go city, go the other extreme. You know, we are so blessed in the United States to have a great national park system, and mm-hmm. some of those parks are actually better visited during the winter and spring than in the summer. My family has gone to Joshua Tree and Death Valley for spring break. Death Valley especially has a lot more to offer than you might think. Or if you don't mind the snow, it's a fantastic time to go to Yellowstone, Yosemite, Grand Teton. You'll basically have the park and its beauty to yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think a lot of parents forget about the educational component. I mean, last week when I was in London, my daughter was like, Mom, you know, I just spent the last semester studying about Stonehenge. Can we go out there? And, you know, we jumped
absolutely.
On a train the next day and went out to Stonehenge. But bringing those things to life that your children have been learning about in school, I mean, that you can't even imagine how beneficial that is to your child's learning process.
Absolutely. I think travel is one of the most educational things that you can do for your child. And, you know, it's also an opportunity to kind of stretch yourself and go do something, you know, a little bit out there that you normally wouldn't do. For example, this past week, my family was at Whistler. You know, ski resorts are another great option during spring break. But I'm not one of those people who can spend the entire day on the slope. I'm not physically physically fit enough to do it. So I always look for a ski resort that offers something extra. And Whistler's an example of a place that has so many options. We actually rode a bobsled on the former Olympic track. And it was, you know, a little death-defying, a little little scary, but it was a thrill. And the family did it together, you know, whizzing down that track at 77 miles an hour. And it's something that my boys are going to forever remember.
Right. Well, I just want, we have 2 minutes left. So in 2 minutes or less, can you answer that question that moms say, my kids just aren't old enough to travel with yet?
You know, I'm a firm believer that you can travel at any age. You just need to set the right expectations. So when the kids are younger, you know, start small. If it's a weekend beach trip or something a little closer to home. And then as they get older and you're more confident in their ability to travel further, then you can start venturing out. But there's, you know, absolutely no excuse for not traveling. Just do it intelligently. Do it, you know, do what your family's capable of doing. I think when kids are really young, some of these, you know, all-inclusive type resorts are a good choice because you're hunkered down in one spot, and if they need a mid-morning or a mid-afternoon nap, it's not that big of a deal to go back to the room or find a cabana, you know, poolside preferably, where they can, you know, tuck away. And you can still enjoy yourself and get some much-needed, you know, R&R.
Right, right. Well, really good information. We have a link to your website on momtalkradio.com. I want to encourage everybody. I, as you guys know, am a huge lover of beaches, resorts. It's a good first-time foreign destination. But thank you so much for being with us today, Shelley. And when we return, we've got Sammy Cohn with us. She is an author. And she's going to be talking about leveraging your online persona to build a business. Delighted to have with us today a very smart mom. She's not only smart in the way she parents her children, but in the way she runs her business. She is the author of Raising Uncommon Kids. She's the mom of a 10 and a 2-year-old. Her name is Sammy Cohn, and she's joining us today on Mom Talk Radio. So welcome, Sammy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So first of all, can you just give me the 30-second on your book? Because I will not do it justice in describing what's inside, but it is a really, really good book.
I appreciate that. Sure. It's basically each chapter, it's a 12-chapter, 12-step approach to helping raise more compassionate and less entitled kids. And it takes a very you know, stair-step approach. And that everything has to begin at home. Sometimes we want our kids to change the world, but we don't know how to model that at home. So it looks at your heart at home, helping them grow their attitude towards others, and then finally looking at how they can influence the world.
Well, it's I saw it when it came out and read it, and it's a really good book. And I want to let everyone
Thank
know
you.
We are going to have a link on Mom Talk Radio. So you have taken your business, you started blogging, and really taken your online presence and used other media besides your blog to build your business. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think a lot of women would like to do what you've done.
Sure. It was a very intentional choice because pretty early in my blogging career, and I've been blogging since 2009. I think that's when I realized what blogging really could be. I knew that I wasn't going to be the biggest. I knew I wasn't going to be the fastest. I had no desire to be that or try to, so to speak, keep up with the Joneses of blogging. So I knew I needed to exercise my talent. So number one, I realized what my talents were. I have a master's in communication. I teach public speaking at a university here. I'm familiar with media. I'm comfortable with other media. And so I approached a local TV station about having a segment that grew into what's now been 7 years later, a regular reoccurring monthly segment. I was then able to take that and leverage that with a local radio station that has a national show, and a year later became a regular on that as well. From there, once I was able to build up that content, I had people saying, you should syndicate. So now I have my own 60-second show called The Family Money Minute that airs on over 250 stations nationwide. So if you look at my blog numbers alone, yeah, they're good. They're solid. They're not what I would consider, you know, earth-shattering by any stretch of the imagination. But when you look at the audience that I can reach across TV, radio, podcasts, blog, social media, it's a totally different ball game, and I'm able to then pitch that towards companies in a different way as opposed to just getting revenue through ads, which I don't do on my blog.
Yeah, you know, and I think that you bring up a good point. I think all too often women start businesses and we try to imitate another business. So we see someone doing something, we're like, oh, I can do that. But in reality, what you've done so well is set yourself apart by doing something a little bit different. And I think that that has really been the key to your business. I know that I did that when I went into radio. If you look at my numbers on my blog, they're relatively low. But when you look at distribution through radio, it's a lot higher. So you've done that really, really well.
And not being afraid to bring that to light. I feel like so many bloggers especially are bumping up their numbers or they're paying for followers. And what they don't realize is that PR professionals can see that. They can see when you've bought followers, or they can very easily check to verify if your numbers are real or not. Instead of saying, and it, you know, I'm very quick to admit, first of all, you know, someone might say, can we buy a sidebar ad on your website? I say, no, because that's not going to do well for you. And then we're both going to end up unhappy because you're not going to work with me, want to work with me again. And right. I'm not going to, you know, make the money that I could if I perchance did a really creative segment that we worked into something on TV as well. So when you're quick to admit, this isn't what I can do, but this is what I can do, and this is where I see the need with your business, and this is how my business can support it, you're not only going to get that one job, you're going to get multiple jobs and develop a relationship with that organization.
That's some really, really great advice. And I want to encourage, because we don't have enough time to go into it more, but I want to encourage everyone to follow Sammy online. You can follow her on Twitter at The Sammy Cone, and that's S-A-M-I-C-O-N-E. Or you can go to her blog and website under the same name, S-A-M-I-C-O-N-E.com. Pick up her book for sure. And you can go to momtalkradio.com to find links to everything about Sammy. So thank you so much for joining us today, and Happy New Year, Sammy. Good luck with your business.
Happy New Year. Thank you, and thanks for all you do to support us out there.
Thank you. When we return, we're going to turn our attention to the author of Raising an Entrepreneur, 10 Rules for Nurturing Risk Takers, Problem Solvers, and Change Makers.
Helping you succeed at the most important career you'll ever have. Welcome to Mom Talk with Maria Bailey.
I love raising entrepreneurial children. I think it's, I don't know, out of all of the types of children that you could raise, or the focus that you put on the type of child you'd raise, I think that raising an entrepreneurial child really creates a solution finder, and someone who is flexible, and someone who wants to roll up their sleeves. And I was so delighted when I saw this book come across my desk, Raising an Entrepreneur, 10 Rules for Nurturing Risk Takers, Problem Solvers, and Change Makers. The author is Margot Maycall-Bisnow, and she is here with us today. She has done amazing things, and I want to get right to her so that she can share some of her wisdom with you. So welcome, Margot, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. So I think that the generation of children coming up have an attitude, a can-do attitude, because of technology. But I'm wondering, what we can do as parents to breed that entrepreneurial spirit where they take that can-do attitude and turn it into something great for themselves?
That is a wonderful question. And I love the fact that you talk about entrepreneurial, because I think so many people, when they hear entrepreneur, they turn off and they think, ooh, just a tech geek. But for me, an entrepreneurial child or an entrepreneur is anyone who starts something. So it's a for-profit company, a nonprofit, it's artists, it's activists, it's even people who start projects within other companies. So it's just getting that mindset, like you're saying, that entrepreneurial mindset where they can do anything.
And so what did you do to write the book? Did you talk to parents? Did you do research? Tell me a little bit about that process.
I did research. I read every book I could get my hands on. But the most important thing was that I talked to 60 entrepreneurs and or their moms about how they were raised.
And so what did you find?
Well, I found these 10 rules. I took everything I learned in from the conversations, and I distilled them into 10 different rules. But the most important rule, the rule that every single entrepreneur I talked to, is that they all had a parent, generally their mom, who believed in them. And people say, oh, everyone believes in their child. But that's not true. Everyone loves their child. But that's a very different thing.
So give me an example. What would be the difference of a mom who loves their child and a mom who believes in their child? So just everyday practicality.
My younger son has always loved music. Most parents with a child like my son Austin say things like, of course you can take music lessons in high school, but in college you have to major in something useful, or major in business and minor in music, or at least get a teaching certificate so you have something to fall back on when the music thing fails. So what does that communicate to the child?
Right, that you need a prenup.
Well, makes the parents, I think the parents are convinced that their children have to do something practical. And in fact, that's just not true. And in fact, it's counterproductive. I think many children, almost probably every child is born with a passion, but it gets snuffed out by well-intentioned parents. And I want parents to relax and to let kids follow their dreams.
You know, that is so interesting, because I'm actually going through that right now, where my daughter is auditioning for musical theater programs in for college. And a lot of her peers, I hear exactly what you just said. Their parents are going, and they're saying it to me, and I know they're saying it in front of their children, like, oh, you know, she really wants to pursue this drama thing, but I keep telling her that it's not practical, or it's too hard of a road, and so your example totally resonates. Like, I'm hearing that every single day from parents.
Yeah, so, one of the people I interviewed in the book is Jeff Marx's mom. He wrote Avenue Q, and he's written a lot of other musicals and songs, and everybody sort of laughed at her all along the way. And she believed in his talent.
Yeah, that's funny. It's not funny. It's a really, really great example. So what about helicopter parenting? Is it good or is it bad? I mean, is there a difference in believing in your child and letting them go and pursue it? Like, where's the boundaries there?
So that was one of the many surprises for me in the book, is that I thought that more parents would be more involved than a lot of them were. I think that a lot of the parents who try to solve their kids' problems for them end up finding that their kids don't know how to solve problems themselves. Esther Wojcicki, who one of her daughters is CEO of YouTube, and one is founded 23andMe. And she says, every time I do something for them, that's something they don't know how to do for themselves. Mm-hmm. And some of the parents were very involved, but a lot of the parents were so busy with their own lives and with their own jobs. But the kids always said, like, My parents worked two jobs and they weren't there much, but I always knew that if I needed them, they were there, and I always knew they trusted me.
Yeah. You know, my husband, I'm not sure that I always agreed at the beginning, but he always had a saying, and that is never do for a teenager what they can do for themselves.
Yeah.
And there were a couple times that maybe I took that to an extreme, like when the pediatrician would call and say, Mrs. Bailey, really, your children, you need to come to the doctor's appointment with your children. But, you know, if the orthodontist called and said, you know, I need to schedule an appointment, I would give them my child's cell phone number and say, you know what, they keep their own calendar, so could you please call them? But that's really, really great advice. So what is there anything else that the entrepreneurs had in common with their the way they were parented?
Well, so something that was so fascinating to me was that I purposely picked the most diverse group I could find. It's half men, it's half women. It's 20% minority. It's from families with only kids to three kids, five kids, seven kids. It's every race, every religion. It's from small towns. It's from big cities. It's born in the U.S. It's born in Canada. It's born overseas and emigrated here. It's every kind of family. It's families whose parents were, you know, doctors and lawyers and single moms who were barely making it.
What's the conclusion? Because we have to wrap pretty soon. What did you see?
They all believed in their child, and their child all knew that their parent trusted them and believed in them.
Well, really good lesson. And the book is called Raising an Entrepreneur, 10 Rules for Nurturing Risk Takers, Problem Solvers, and Change Makers. Margo, thank you so much for spending some of your day with us, and Happy New Year. When we return, we're going to turn our attention to 3D learning.
The number one podcast for busy moms, Mom Talk Radio.
I am delighted to have with us today Mira and Mark Halbert. They, Mira and Mark, are the founders of 3D Learning Program, which helps students who learn differently become successful. Together, the two of them work closely to help parents and professionals to help them coach and advocate their children's needs. I met Mira several years ago, and very smart lady that I'm happy to have back on Mom Talk Radio. So welcome and Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Happy New Year to you.
So I have one of those children who do learn differently. Unfortunately, we didn't learn that until I knew it as a mom, but the professionals couldn't figure it out until she was a sophomore in high school. Tell me how your 3D learning program would have helped a mom like myself.
Well, that's a great question because, like you, right, we became a mom on a mission to try and sort this out. Part of the challenge is that we did so many things and tried so many different programs. And what I recognize is that our daughter was really smart. She just learned differently, and she thought in pictures. She didn't learn like everyone else. Of course, today now we know that actually over 65% of children actually do learn differently. It's just that our system has not changed.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
That's a real problem. These are kids that really think differently. They're creative problem solvers. They don't necessarily, they don't read directions because those small words don't make pictures for them.
Right.
But they are so often misidentified as attention issues or as
auditory processing.
Auditory processing, sometimes dyslexic. I mean, the challenge is that you can go off on a really long off pattern. We've recognized now that thousands of kids we've worked with is when you start to look at what these kids can do and you go to their abilities, it's amazing what they succeed in a short amount of time.
So I want to make sure that I get to the core of the program. So I'm a mom who I just have this feeling my child learns differently. How do you help?
Okay, so one of the things we start with is a success assessment. We start by no cost of success assessment they can do online that looks at how if their child learns differently, if their child has an attention issue, an eye teaming issue, an anxiety challenge, and then we have a stress to success strategy session where we walk the parent through with, as Mira said, a sharp focus on what their child's good at, where their child's at, and where they aspire to have their child get to.
And then is it an ongoing type of service and coaching that you do, or how does that work?
So we have a little different kind of a program. We actually have an office in Boca Raton, Florida, but we've worked with kids from around the world. And they can come, if they come from another place, they can come for an intensive, actually even intensive week, or break it up. You know, South Florida is kind of a fun place to come for people that live in the snow belt during the middle of the winter. But we have found that we train both the student and the parents, because as a parent, you need to become a different sort of a coach for your kids, and for these kids especially. So we have an ongoing intensive program that we do here in the office, or else we now have it available to be able to coach parents and students around the world. Of course, now technology has gotten to the point where we can now coach them, you know, over the internet.
And, you know, I think that you're so right. I think as a parent, sometimes we think we can cure our child's problem or challenge. And in reality, we have to think differently about it. I mean, oh my gosh, I can't even tell you how guilty I feel for all those years that I was like yelling at my child, basically, to sound out the words when she didn't have the ability to sound out a word, you know. And we have to face sometimes I think the coaching to help us look at our children a little bit differently really pays off.
Well, you
it really does.
And the big deal right is, there.
The big deal
exactly
is actually
right.
Getting to the point where the parent realizes their kid's a lot smarter than their results would indicate. They learn differently and often have attention. Eye teaming issues turn out to be big, and reading comprehension turns out to be a huge problem for these kids.
Yeah.
Right.
So I want to make sure that we get your website in there where moms can go to find you. Can you talk a little bit about your website and the URL?
Well, our website is www.3dlearner.com/2017, now that we're in a brand new year. And we've done that specifically, Maria, actually, for your listeners, so that we can offer them something particularly special. Mark and I spent 7 years or more writing a book called The 3D Learner, Transform Stress to Outrageous Success for Your Child. And we'd love to be able to offer your listeners a complimentary copy for just shipping charges.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, thank you. And we're going to put that offer on momtalkradio.com with a link over so that people can do it. We are out of time, but I want to thank both of you so much for the efforts that you have put toward that child who may just learn a little bit differently. And I got to tell you, by the time I got to the fourth child, I thought I knew it all. And then she kind of changed that for me. But I thank you for your efforts. And we have a link to 3dlearner.com/2017. So make sure you pick up their book. Thank you, Mira and Mark, for spending some of your new year with us and on Montauk Radio. When we return, we're going to be talking with the story strategist at Backstory Studios. Delighted to have with us today Ted Frank. He is a story strategist at Backstory Studio, which uses movie style storytelling to help people make their presentations quicker, more visible, and more emotionally effective. He is a longtime veteran in the advertising world, and he's here to talk a little bit about doing it better in a storytelling fashion. So welcome, Ted, to Mom Talk Radio.
Thank you.
So moms not only work on presentations for themselves and their businesses and for the groups that they lead, but they're also trying to help their kids with presentations, whether it's the college student who's trying to tell the story of their aspirations or a particular subject, but also their children. So can you talk a little bit about what you do and how you help?
Sure. What we do at Backstories is we help companies by harnessing the story strategies that movies use, because that really works in corporate America, because their movies are built on the same kind of storytelling strategies that corporations really value, which is being quick, simple, visual, and powerful. And there's a lot of techniques that movies use that you can bring to a typical presentation without ever needing a camera or video or anything like that.
And is it a service that we subscribe to or software that we buy? Can you tell me how it works?
Yeah, we have two ways that we go about it. We have workshops where we go into companies and we spend the day with them and we teach them how to either go from, let's say, a super data-rich, bloated presentation deck to something that's somewhere halfway between a TED Talk and a movie storyboard. And then we've got one called the high-stakes presentation, which are for those like two or three presentations that you do that are really, really important and that maybe go to the executives and you really need to hit it out of the park. And so those workshops take a day. And then we also work on projects with companies when they have really high-stakes presentations, and then we put together videos for them. And then I've got a book that just came out called Get to the Heart, which covers both these things and is a perfect introduction for anybody who really wants to do more and get their voice heard in their company.
Is it a good idea? I mean, a lot of our moms might have smaller companies. I mean, speak to how important it is for that smaller company and their growth to speak like you're bigger than you might be.
Well, everybody has a need to tell their story in a really cogent and powerful way, and it's large or small. So, you know, if you're a smaller company, then you definitely have to be doing pitches to prospective clients, investors, and all these kinds of storytelling techniques can really, really help you. And they might not make you look huge, but they're going to make you look like the people that they want to work with, because they're going to paint you, or they're going to show who you really are and help you really get to the heart of what your business is all about and the value it brings, and then also really touch people in an emotional way that really makes that connection that's even more powerful than being a big company.
Yeah, I think what I love about what you're doing is that I think so much of the time we just put our words into a PowerPoint, and in some cases it doesn't even tell the story. And I was just talking with someone the other day who had 500 words to tell their story. And I said to them, look at every single one of those sentences. Like, what is it saying? Like, what story is it saying and what is it saying? And I think we're just so used to putting what we want to say into bullets that we've forgotten the storytelling aspect of life.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's something that the templates kind of force upon us, and they really steer us toward the speaking to the rational part of our stakeholders' minds, when in reality the emotional part is at least as important. And you know, like one of the greatest metaphors I heard is that the rational mind is like a human driver who's riding on top of an elephant, who is the emotional part.
Well, good stuff. And I want to let everyone know the link to the book, gettotheheartbook.com. That's where you'll find Ted's book. Ted, thank you so much for being with us today on Mom Talk Radio. Really good. You know, I think of 2017 and you think about the story that you would have told about 2016. So now's a really good time to think about how you're going to tell the story. And I'm going to tell you to visit our website or go and download our app so that you can take me along, listen to us anytime. If you can't tune in at the station at this time, you can always have Mom Talk Radio. You can follow us on Twitter at Mom Talk Radio. Thanks everyone for joining us, and can't wait to have a fantastic. It'll be the 21st year of Mom Talk Radio, so a fantastic 2017. Thanks for coming along with me.